From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
We're on with The Media Project, a half hour of analysis and commentary, and some days even some insight into the news media issues of the week.
I resent that. I resent that some days. There's always something to be learned from The Media Project.
Well, always something for some people to learn. Dr. Shartok, that would be Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, just offering his early insights of the program here. Kaylin Brown is here, the head of the journalism program at the College of St. Rose.
And I just learned something from Alan, so how about that?
What was that?
The first one on the count.
There you go. And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, and we are The Media Project for this week, trying to give you whatever it is that you would like to have. We do have a little piece of mail from someone who wrote in earlier and said, I cannot believe so much of what I wrote made it onto the air. That is such a wonderful feeling, particularly given how much I respect each of you. Thank you very much. Very kind, John, to send in your commentary. And we are always happy to have comments, and they can help shape this program, media at WAMC.org.
So let me ask you a question.
Sir, Rich. Please.
You're a guy who's been an editor of many papers now, and the letters to the editor. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that letters to the editor are the most read part, one of the most read part of the paper, right?
That's correct. I mean, maybe the people column, if it's easy to find, you know, folks love celebrity news. But actually, what we know is that the front page, of course, is the most read part of the paper. People really pay attention to the letters to the editor, yes.
So, and I know when I read the Berkshire Eagle in the morning, or I read the TU, which I do in the middle of the night, and I always go to the letters because I'm interested, especially on a local level, what people are saying.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those letters are quite mean.
Mean. Yes.
So my question to you is, when you decide as an editor what goes into the letters column, what do you want there?
Not mean. We do not want mean.
Well, yeah.
There are several things, actually. For one thing, you want a diversity of views. So if somebody writes in actually offering a point of view contrary to an editorial that you've published, that actually helps elevate it because people like to read about controversy. So they like it when somebody writes in and says, you people at the Times Union really don't know what you're talking about. That's kind of good. We do not allow personal attacks in our columns. And there.
So Shartok is a jerk. Would not.
No, yeah, okay. Would not. However, if there was documentation of Shartok's jerkiness, we would publish the facts.
The evidence makes a difference. This is very serendipitous right now because our students are writing letters to the editor.
Ah.
That is an assignment every semester. They have to identify a story published in their hometown newspaper, so they come from all over. And then we talk about how you approach it, sort of like an argumentative essay. And most students want to write from a position of anger, so that would explain the meanness. I try to encourage them, it doesn't have to be an angry emotion that triggers your decision to write a letter to the editor. But we look at, again, I've brought this up at least three times, Kovac and Rosenstiel talks about in Elements of Journalism.
New professors always naming books that nobody ever will
this
ever
is,
read.
Hey, Tom Rosenstiel is a
this.
Friend of mine. We were classmates.
So. I didn't know. This is a
real
Bible in my classroom. Anyway, they say that the newspaper and the media need to provide a forum for public comment and criticism.
True.
So the letters to the editor does just that. It's a great way for the public to feel engaged.
But we do not allow people to establish, as Daniel Patrick Moynihan famously said, their own set of facts. They are entitled to their own opinions, but not their own set of facts. And we do try to fact check. That is, if somebody makes an assertion that we believe not to be true, we will not publish it.
And what if it's libelous?
Oh, no, we don't publish libel.
Okay. All right. So now you all will remember from many years of The Media Project, when I first got to New Paltz as a young professor, I used to say, anybody who gets two letters into the New York Times gets an A.
Aha.
Now, almost impossible. But one guy wrote a letter, one letter to the editor trying to get that A One letter, he was a very smart guy, would have gotten an A anyway. But he wrote a letter to the editor saying, we should do what some of the Arabian countries do, which is somebody steals, cut off their hand.
Oh, boy.
And stop spending $80,000 a year on a prison cell or whatever, he said.
Okay.
And Marion, the editorial lady, no, Marion's your wife's name, but Marion is also a name.
So, I know my wife's name.
Okay. Yeah, no, I know that. I know that. I just want to clarify that. So the lady called me up and said, can you find this guy for me? Because we want to publish his letter. And I did. So there was pretty good proof that the New York Times was looking for the opposing view.
Diversity of viewpoints. Yes, I would say that would conflict with their editorial
and
stance.
And he got it into the Times. He got his letter into the Times. It was wonderful. Now, the Times is very selective about. But think about this for a second. If you are advising, people come to you and say, Rex and Kaylin, you guys are very learned about the newspaper profession. How do we get free publicity? There is no better way than letters to the editor. So you see what happens. I'm going on a little long here. I get that. So you see them, PR people telling them in a concentrated campaign to write. For example, in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, the Berkshire Museum has decided to sell its patrimony, its Norman Rockwell collection and other things, in order to get enough money to change their mission. This has erupted into a great controversy. There isn't a day there isn't a letter in the Berkshire Eagle, mostly from people who are opposed to it.
It's a national controversy in the museum world, of course, also.
And it is. It is a point I have made in at least two columns that this is what's going on. But now you see the museum fighting back, and letters are showing up every day which are sort of saying exactly the same thing. So do you think people ever organize others so that letters to the editor are written in a campaign?
That actually is what editorial page editors refer to as astroturf. When something is made to look like the grassroots springing up and offering a point of view, but it's actually organized.
Yeah.
You know, these organizations even have sample letters, and some people are so lazy that they will
send us a letter
that says, dear, insert newspaper here. And so we know that this stuff is not real. And there's nothing wrong with organizing a campaign and saying, write letters to the editor of your newspaper, but there is something wrong with other people writing your letter for you and you just pretending to plug it in. And when you get letters that say exactly the same thing over and over again,
right, you know,
of course, that's what it is.
And of course, Rex, this also goes on with political campaigns.
Sure.
Because it's free publicity. You don't have to pay for it.
We tend to not publish many of those when there are just outright candidate endorsements. You know, usually those are, you can tell that that's just a partisan pitch. And so we tend not to do a lot of that. We tend to really look for issues. If somebody is saying, I support Alan Chartok for Congress, we would probably not write that. But if somebody were to say, here's why Alan Chartok is a good candidate for Congress, it's kind of an ephemeral thing, but you're looking for the issues that a person writes about, not the person.
So what would you do with this? Our student newspaper in the past week received postage marked St. Petersburg, Florida, on Loyal White Knight stationery, a letter supporting the KKK. And the students were stuck with trying to decide what to do about this letter. They made a decision, but what would you do, Rex?
First thing you do is you try to determine whether it's valid, whether it's real. I mean, we check out everybody who writes a letter to the editor. We call them and personally talk to them and say, is this you? Have you sent this to any place else? Because our standard is it has to be exclusive to the Times Union. We don't publish anything. It's been published elsewhere. If it's a real person, and also the Loyal White Knights, you would say, why are you writing to us? I think that there's some question. It's probably not real. My guess is this is somebody just trying to say, gee, look at this. I can get this letter published in a campus newspaper. What did you do?
So
what happened to the students?
Well,
So
as the advisor, I recommended that they not give this organization the time of day because I didn't think the organization was deserving of any attention. But the students only listen to my advice and don't always take it. So their decision was to publish a brief, a very short amount of language saying, we received this and we are not publishing it. And they almost referenced nothing about the letter.
Did they determine whether it was a real person?
They did not determine that.
Well, I think that's a mistake. I think that this could just be a fraud. Mm-hmm. I think they should have reached out to the person and said, who are you? Why are you writing to us? That kind of thing.
Yeah, but let me just warn our audience, because Rex, I don't want to call you pompous, but there was a certain pomposity.
Want to call you pompous, but
but you did say You did say we check out every letter. Most newspapers don't check out every letter.
Huh.
And not only that, but many newspapers, including my wonderful Berkshire Eagle, who I have to say I'm a columnist for.
Wasn't pompous or anything.
No, not at all. No, it was just self-serving.
Factual. Yes.
Yeah. My students do get calls from newspapers asking to verify their identity and that
Good.
They wrote the letter.
No,
let them know in the assignment that that may happen. They may get a call. So answer your cell phone, even if you don't recognize the phone.
Well, yes. And that's exactly what happened when the New York Times called me about this kid all of those years ago. I just want to point out that in some cases, newspapers check authenticity. In some cases, they do not. In some cases, as Rex said, when it comes to candidates, they don't publish every letter. In some cases, they do because they think it's a good forum. And I like it because it is a free forum. You know, with the with the influx of money into politics, I love the idea that there's one place that if you do your homework, you can probably get a little publicity.
Yes.
There you go. So this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Kalen Brown, and Rex Smith with you here, and we welcome your contribution. And I want to read you a headline from a story that we are going to discuss. Nearly half of voters are buying Trump's the media. That was probably bleeped on the version that you just heard. I warned our producer, David Gustina, that we would be discussing this. And
right.
But you get the idea, folks, that
sure,
there
you don't
was
have to pay the
something quite amazing about this. Here is the results of a survey by Politico. 46% of voters say that the media make up stories about the president. Only 37% say they do not. Isn't that stunning? I am stunned to hear that a plurality of voters believe that the media make up stories about the president. It shows that the effort to undermine the press, I'd say to undermine the First Amendment and convince voters that journalists are making up stories, is bearing fruit, particularly among Republican voters. A vast majority of Republicans believe that stories about the president are being made up.
Now, one of the reasons, Rex, that this makes great sense to me is that there are an awful lot of people who've had experiences with newspapers and with radio stations and other places who really believe that they've been done in.
Done in is different from making up. I mean, you bring this up all the time, that people have seen errors in stories about them.
Well,
you
know,
that you went to the Lions Club or the Rotary Club and people raised their hands. Yeah.
They misquoted me as a regular complaint. But when push comes to shove, they don't contact the paper and say, that was inaccurate.
Sometimes.
More often than not, they don't. You go out and they say, as a reporter, and they say, oh, there was a story that was wrong about me and there were inaccuracies. And usually, remember people criticizing a paper and saying I was misquoted.
I shouldn't have cut you off, Alan. I'm sorry.
On the contrary. On the contrary, it is so expected and so de rigueur of you.
De rigueur.
They don't call the paper and tell the paper.
But I was just trying to explain something, and that is, why is it that so many people are prepared to take Trump's word that it's phony press? Because they already have an issue with the press. I will never forget when I was publisher of the Fire Island News, when the lady yelled at me because I didn't put her garden party into the paper.
Uh-huh.
She was furious in front of a whole room full of people. I wasn't the editor, I was the publisher. And, you know, she got really angry. I get that.
Everybody has a reason to be mad at the media, of course.
Yes, her garden party was the most important thing happening in her life.
It was.
And she couldn't believe that you would not pay attention to that.
Especially since you put money into the newspaper.
Oh. Well, that raises a whole other set of
questions.
Well,
there you go. I mean, it's one thing to say, I don't like something that the newspaper published, or I disagree with something that was in there, but to believe that as 76% of Republicans believe that news outlets fabricate stories about President Trump is outrageous.
It is outrageous.
But when you look at Republicans who are supporting Trump in all of the polling, that's the number. It's up there in the 70s. So when you ask them that any antagonist of the president is potentially wrong, they'll say, damn right.
I've been in this business for 40 years. I have never...
You're older than 40?
I'm actually speaking to you on my birthday, by the way.
Happy birthday,
Betsy.
Thank you very kindly. So I am actually older than 40, amazingly enough. I mean, I don't know how this happened. Clean living, I guess. The fact is, I've never been in a newsroom where it would have been impossible to fabricate a story. There are checks and balances. There are editors who read stories. There is an ethic. There is a sensibility in newsrooms about how you go about your business that would not make it possible to actually fabricate stories.
Okay, I'm just going to take the con on this because nobody dislikes this particular president more than I do. But just put yourself into that spot and say it's a matter of emphasis. So if you're watching CNN these days, the big story, because nature abhors a vacuum, is that Trump was insensitive to the Gold Star mother of a son who was killed in Niger, right? Isn't that right?
Yeah, and there's a little more. You know, he brought this on by bragging that he alone has been reaching out to service members, unlike other presidents. And, you know, it's just his...
Yes, but it has become the number one story on the cable news because it has to be something every day, right? Otherwise, people aren't going to watch or aren't going to read. So this has now taken over the airwaves on a level which you might say is on a level with what we're reading about the possibility of a nuclear war with North Korea. So I think there are some partisans who think that the emphasis placed on some stories by the news media is basically made up.
Emphasis is certainly valid to argue about. You know, I think I could argue as well that that is overdone. But to say that we're making up stories is really unbelievable.
I wonder if the making up story believers are not as interested in doing the work of actually paying attention to the real news. And it is more stone gathering moss than the fact that they are actually reading the news. Because, for instance, when you look at the Washington Post collaboration with 60 Minutes this week, CNN and Washington Post?
Washington Post and CBS, 60 Minutes and Washington Post.
Right. Uh-huh. Thank you. Mm-hmm. This was an extraordinary story that went into great depth talking about how Tom Marino was nominated and eventually withdrew, and the kind of work that went into this story to describe how the DEA has changed its tenor, and they are almost, in some instances, supportive of, I would say, Big Pharma, which is letting the drug epidemic in the country grow and grow. The work that went into that story is extraordinary. It takes almost as much work, but not, to just read the story. So I see people being critical because they're too lazy and don't understand what has been written about important stories. This is a super important story that this person would have been nominated for this position and then withdraws his nomination after the reporting that was done that essentially proved that he should not be in that position.
Well, no, I agree with that. I think you're right, except that if you're on the other side of the political aisle, you don't see it that way. And the question for you and Rex, because you're both, let's face it, defenders of the newspaper
First
faith.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Right.
I would say that in light of what this administration is doing, it's the only patriotic thing to do because we're defending the First Amendment.
What's patriotic? I'm so sorry.
To defend the news media in the face of the attack on the First Media by this president.
Well, but of course, Rex, it is your profession.
It is
you
my
have an investment
patriotic
in that,
responsibility to defend this constitutional right. And the president is attacking it.
I couldn't agree with you more.
I'm getting pompous. I'm sorry.
No,
but
I couldn't agree with you more. You're right.
I mean, you are right.
I'm just trying to tell you what the other side may be thinking.
The unpatriotic other side.
Unlike a newspaper man, I'm a political scientist, so I have to look and see what the other side may be thinking.
So one thing we should keep in mind is this question of sides. Perhaps that's part of the problem, that it's important we don't use certain language that creates tensions that might not necessarily have to exist. The language we use when we talk about the president's BASE base, I think, is actually problematic. Why base? Why isn't it just his supporters? Have you ever heard in any earlier presidential position where someone was a president over a long amount of time that he had his base to whom he spoke? Why are we naming them base?
That's
They're
interesting.
Supporters.
It's become a term that is widely used by me, quasi-intellectuals. And it's a term of art, I guess. You're right. It has become like one of those terms that folks...
Well, no, I think people know what it means. You know, that base, and I'm going to use that word, of Donald Trump is, you know, somewhere hovering around somewhere between 35 and 40% of the electorate. And if you don't use the word base, you have to use another word, which say...
His supporters.
But it's not just his supporters. It is a particular group of supporters who can do no wrong. I have a very good friend, for example, who has a whole bunch of children, and Trump is about to get rid of the CHIP program, right? Now, we read about this in the
Child Health Plus.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredible life-saving program. When I spoke with my friend about it, he said, oh, no, that's not Trump, that's the Congress. And mm-hmm. I'm saying, no, it really is Trump. This is really something that has been put forward by Trump in order to do this. So I'm saying there is a group of people who do not get off the dime no matter what. And I think Hillary was right when she spoke of the base.
You know, it's such a sad situation, though. We now have among Republicans, again, a plurality believe that the government should be able to revoke the broadcast licenses of news outlets that the government says fabricates news stories. So 46% of Republicans say, yes, the government ought to be able to take away, to shut down people if the government thinks that the news stories that it presents are not real. And that's very dangerous.
Well, it's not only dangerous as somebody who runs 29 public radio stations. I can tell you it's not only dangerous, but I believe it is exactly the slippery slope that leads you into totalitarian fascism. Really, because if you look at history, you will see that the great despots of all times have always closed down whatever we call the public media. And that is in African countries, it's in South American countries, and now it's here in this country. And it is one of the most dangerous things I have ever seen.
So rather than just lamenting it, it seems we have to move forward with some sort of solutions-oriented journalism, for one thing. And in our classrooms, we have media literacy classes at college campuses across the country. I think that's too late to start media literacy. I think media literacy needs to begin in elementary school. I think that if students understand, and they're actually called pupils when they're in elementary school, or they used to be according to AP style, that they should be made aware of how journalism works, because that may change how people view the media. I don't think they have an understanding of what goes into reporting a story like the Marino story and the DEA story.
Wait a second now. There is an American ethos, for want of a better word, which is that Americans have no idea about what's happening.
That's part of the ethos, is ignorance is valued. It's a cherished American tradition.
No, it is. And it isn't only, as you guys have pointed out time and time again ad nauseum, what we do in our public schools and a couple of people being taught how to fold the New York Times and hold it on the subway. Sorry. Is that we have to deal with the fact that we have a so-called Republican democracy and we're not able to get people to understand the issues, because if they don't get the issues, they certainly aren't going to be able to participate on any meaningful level.
But isn't that what Kalen is saying, that we need to get people concerned enough about issues to want to pay attention and then to be able to decipher what's real from what is not?
Yeah, but you guys are always sort of doing this newspaper literacy thing. It runs much deeper. It's a part of it, but it runs much deeper than just what people are reading in newspapers. It depends on why people at their home. I was talking to somebody the other day who said, you know, in our home, in came Papa, and he would say, in a different country, he would say, let's talk about the issues of the day, kids. It doesn't happen in America. We say politics is bad. Stay away from politics. No religion or politics at the table.
But education happens, and that's a ground where it is fertile to teach students
and the minute education,
about how journalism works.
And the minute education happens, Kalen, what's going to happen is somebody's going to show up in the principal's office and say the teacher was taking sides by even bringing this up. And it happens all the time.
I think you're right. That will happen. I'd say that's a risk worth taking, that you need to do
easy
that.
Easy for you to say.
Well,
easy
yep.
for you to say if you're not fired.
Isn't that an interesting point of view? Anyway, we're going to have to leave that, and you could share your thoughts by mailing media@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Kalen Brown, and Rex Smith, we have been the Media Project this week. Pretty good conversation about the issues, and we're always happy to have you with us as we originate this program here from Albany, New York, from Northeast Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
I had a lot of insights from this program.
He did.
Publishers of such interesting people, their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Kaylin Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.